listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza. Alan Cardoza. Only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza. Every Monday from 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time to noon, my guests and I will bring you answers and options to raising children today and in our constantly changing future. Today, we're going to talk about raging hormones during the teen years, the cause, effect, and potential treatments. Our guest today is Barb Dean, better known as Nurse Barb. Nurse Barb is a regular on-air health expert on ABC's View from the Bay in San Francisco. She sees patients as a woman's health nurse practitioner. She has her own health blog, which is nursebarb.com, and she teaches at Stanford. And if that's not enough, Barb's also in demand as a national speaker on all things related to women's health. Barb, welcome to the show.
Hi, Alan. It's a pleasure to be here.
We are so happy to have you. I got a chance to go to your website. I got a chance to look at some of the things that you're doing, and I just think it's incredible. You are really covering a lot of ground.
Oh, thank you. It's really fun to just step outside the exam room sometimes and communicate to a wider audience what I think I'm doing with a lot of my patients.
Now, what was there anything in particular that happened or occurred that made you decide that you want to start reaching a wider audience?
Well, I've always done a lot of public speaking, and I like it. I like being an educator, I guess. And one day I was giving a pro bono talk in Florida, and a producer from NBC saw me, and she said, "Hey, you should do my daytime show." And I said, "Oh, sure. Can't be any worse than working in an intensive care unit," which is where I spent the first 8 years of my career. And I liked it. I liked being able to reach a wider audience and sort of, provide that education that a lot of your listeners are providing to their clients, and a lot of the families that are listening want to hear.
Well, I know it's certainly appreciated. And I know one of the areas that maybe for some of us guys is not as comfortable or whatever, but many parents I speak to want to know what's going on with their teen. Now, I think you know a little bit is that we do some of the adolescent transports or the crisis intervention. And one of the questions that I get a lot has to do with raging hormones. So I get parents that are saying, "What can we do? Can you help us understand what's happening to our child?" Now, I don't know that I have the answer, but what can you tell them?
Well, it's a great question, isn't it? And sometimes it causes us to be a little bit stymied because it depends on the age and stage of the child. So, you know, some children will start to have issues with puberty as early as 10 and 11, where we can see some significant mood changes. Others don't start to find, parents don't start to find problems until the child is 15, 16. And for others, it's not until college. So it really depends on, you know, where they're at in their own emotional and physical development.
Well, go ahead.
I can go a little further if you'd like.
Yeah, I was going to say if you could. That's exactly what I was going to say. Is go ahead and take it a little bit further so that, again, some of the parents out there can get a little better grasp of what it is that they're going through, and obviously how we can handle it better.
Sure. And it is a very complicated topic. Of course, there are entire year-long courses developed around this idea. But basically, in puberty, a child's brain starts to become bathed in hormones. And there are gender differences. So boys are different than girls. And the hormones that they're influenced by are also different. And it causes a lot of different manifestations. So you may start to notice with a young teenage boy that they'll start to develop some hair on their upper lip. You know, you'll see those secondary sex characteristics. And with a younger girl, you'll start to see some breast development. or breast but so the girl's being influenced by estrogen and the young man by testosterone. So then you see some manifestations of that, right? So
right.
For a girl, she might start to become much more interested in boys or her appearance or how she looks. Boys may develop a little bit more aggression. They may start to develop some interest in girls, or they may become a little bit more withdrawn depending on how they're feeling about their body image. Body image at this point is, I can't overstate that enough. It is such an important sort of root to a lot of the things that we're seeing with teens.
Now, is part of that, is that a much bigger issue now because, you know, commercialism has made such a huge focus on that?
It is, isn't it? I'm sure you're seeing that, Alan.
Yep.
Especially for girls, there's this incredible pressure to look like one of the Olsen twins or the latest, starlet who's very, very thin and may have some breast development, no hips, extraordinarily skinny, with completely clear skin and perfect hair, perfect teeth. You know, adolescence is not the time that people typically look perfect. I mean, we all just have to look back at our own lives. You know,
yeah.
There's only maybe 2% of people who look good during adolescence.
Right. And I think, too, they need to realize that when they're watching them on television, there's a huge amount of makeup involved. You know, so it isn't as perfect as they may think.
Right. And the boys are trying to develop six-pack abs, maybe, on one hand, but they're also, you know, supersizing the fries, and they're sitting around playing video games or computer games. So they're, you know, there's this cultural mythologic ideal that very few people attain for a variety of reasons. So we do start to see a lot of eating disorders in the early adolescence, not just with girls, but with boys as well. And they can be just minor, where boys are talking about dieting also. So there's the seeds from the media and the seeds from our culture certainly are planted, and then parents can unwittingly water those. So you asked me what parents can do. I think de-emphasize how your child looks and emphasize what's going on the inside. And just staying healthy, exercising to be healthy, exercising to spend time together as a family.
Well, now you're talking a little bit about diet, and I know one of the big issues is acne. And you have, you know, all of these different now acne medicines that are out there on the market. Is that really necessary, or is there a simpler way to deal with it? Can it be dealt with from diet or anti-anxiety or whatever? I mean, what are the major factors that are making this, you know, that make acne? I mean, most of us, I think, had it at that age. But what are the major contributors?
That's a great question. So most acne, you know, acne can be classified as mild, moderate, or severe. If a child has mild acne, you know, simply washing their face regularly, keeping their hands clean, because, you know, if their hands have bacteria on it and they're wiping their face or they're touching their face, they can transmit more bacteria to the face. Just keeping their face clean, avoiding a lot of high-fat foods will help. Regular exercise helps, but then a shower after, you know.
Right.
One of the things with boys is they often don't want to take a shower, and so they can get a lot of acne on their back and their neck. You know, if it's moderate acne, they may benefit from an over-the-counter treatment, you know, some of the face washes that are available. And if it's severe, absolutely get them in to see a healthcare provider. For girls, you know, one of the best ways that we can help with acne is to use a birth control pill, because these decrease the circulating hormones that cause the acne. So just about any birth control pill will work to help decrease that moderate to severe acne. Of course, we don't recommend that for mild acne.
All right. Now the idea of the birth control pill, now is that something that also maybe helps with some of the mood swings and such?
It sure can. You know, with with young women, I'll speak to young women here. Mm-hmm. They can be on an emotional roller coaster. You know, again, their brains are bathed in hormones, and girls are, women in particular, and some more than others, are more susceptible to minor fluctuations in estrogen levels, which affect their serotonin levels. And so if we can modulate the estrogen levels and keep them sort of on an even keel or a constant level throughout the month, we can avoid the roller coaster up and downs, which will help moods. So most birth control pills, whether they're indicated by the FDA or not, will help with moods, as long as they're sort of what we call a monophasic and not a triphasic pill.
Well, let me share something also just from the standpoint of, and for parents, but mainly even for dads. So in other words, if your daughter asks to go on the pill, do not immediately blow your stack and think the worst. Understand that there are other reasons that can be the acne. It can be to help moderate some of the mood swings that could be beneficial. Because as you were saying that, it took me back to, I think, one of the first times that one of my sisters asked to go on the pill, and we thought that the roof was going to go off the house. You know.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Excuse me. Well, there are lots of what we call non-contraceptive benefits to the pill. One is it can prevent a lot of blood loss. It can prevent severe pain with periods, acne, mood swings, but also, let's be honest, it prevents unintended or accidental pregnancy. And, you know, that can be a huge crisis in a family's life, both the young woman's family and the young man's family.
Right. And what I hear you saying is that, you know, is much as we don't want to say yes, do that, because we think that it's going to be a license to be able to go out and have sex, it's a matter of just being realistic to the fact that you still want to educate them about the reasons why you don't, but at the same time, it doesn't hurt to be careful.
You're right, Alan. It doesn't hurt to be careful. And I know that I'm talking to a lot of professionals here, and we all are probably nodding our head and saying, mm-hmm. Yes, wouldn't it be nice if teenagers asked their parents for permission to have sex? I mean, just imagine it, right? Hey, Mom, can I borrow the car? And I need $20. And by the way, can I have sex tonight? You know, that doesn't happen. Kids are not looking to Mom and Dad, for the most part, to have sex. They are making their decisions based on all of the great or not so great foundation that Mom and Dad have laid for their child, no pun intended.
Right.
So, you know, we are giving them the tools they need to make the best choices. You know, we can't be with our children 24/7. We can't be with them in a moment and say, hey, put the condom on, for God's sakes, right? You mm-hmm. can't do that. You have to help them make the best decisions. I mean, after all, none of us, probably none of us listening, asked our parents for permission to have sex, and we never would have linked, oh, I'm going to get the HPV vaccine. Oh, that means I can have sex now.
Yeah, and I, you know, I was just thinking the same thing, and that's one of the things that we do tell some of the parents. You know, when the parents will ask us questions about things like that, we'll go, what did you do? You know, do you remember what you did at that age? And then their eyes light up and they go, uh-oh.
Right. They do. The parents, it's this instant moment of recognition. And a lot of parents who have teens this age were a lot wilder than their teens. You know, a lot of the parents are more responsible, and they've communicated better with their kids. And so, you know, they're looking back thinking, oh my goodness, you know, I hope my child makes some better decisions. Or if their child isn't, they at least they know, okay, you know, here's some consequences to those decisions. And I think parents who've had consequences to bad decisions, I think being honest with their children really helps to say, you know, and you know, I don't know exactly how you feel, but this is what I experienced and this is what happened. And the other thing that helps, I think, is if you made good decisions as a younger person, there's lots of examples in your family or your partner's family or in friends' families, and I think it's important to say, go back to the root and say, you know, so-and-so, look at their life. Is that the life that you would envision? Is that what you're hoping and dreaming for? Let's go back and see when they turned that corner and when all of that happened for them. And sometimes it helps to take the teen back to that pivotal moment when somebody made a bad choice.
Yeah. Actually, as you were saying that, I was thinking about, I was a guest on another radio show, and one of the hosts was a 20-something. She was a 20-something girl, and she said, you know, I look forward to, you know, to becoming a parent, and I can't wait to have kids after I get married. So, but what do I tell them about as far as having sex at an early age, and, you know, as far as doing drugs? Because personally, I had a lot of sex, and I did a lot of drugs, and I loved it. I said, you know, that's probably not what you want to say. and like you said, if you don't have a personal experience that you can tell them that suggests why they shouldn't, go to somebody else. You know, come up with somebody else that they know to where you can key in on that. Don't lie. I mean, don't just make up a big lie about yourself. But, you know, that's not something you need to volunteer.
Right, right. I agree. I think it's good to say something like, you know, I tried it. It wasn't for me. Or, you know, it's normal to want to experiment. It's normal for kids your age to want to do X, Y, or Z. Let's take a look at Uncle So-and-so. Wow. Let's see how he handled that. Now you can see that Uncle So-and-so hasn't been able to keep a job or blah, blah, blah. Now, I'll tell you what we say to my son. My husband and I, we have a 14-year-old. My husband says, look, you know, when you're 18, you can make any decision you want.
Right.
And yes, when you're in college, you're going to want to experiment with lots of different kinds of substances. If you're getting good grades and you're doing this and you're doing that and you're able to maintain your life, you know, you're going to be making those choices. But as you can see, so-and-so wasn't able to do that. They dropped out of school. They did this. They did that once they started using this or that substance.
Well, yeah, and I know we're starting to get into as far as the alcohol and the drugs and things like that. But I think before we go too much further into that,
okay.
let's kind of finish up a little bit with diet. So because I don't know that I got the whole part, but so and I have two teenage boys, and from a diet.
How old are they, Ellen?
13 and 15. So we're on both sides of your 14-year-old. So.
Yeah.
but it's I mean it is a great age. You know, I love it. I feel that, you know, I've worked with so many young kids about this age and knowing what I went through, you know, I understand. You know, I feel like I can relate. Now, with girls it's a different thing. I don't know that I can relate as well. But from a diet standpoint, you know, what can we do? What can we add, you know, add to the diet? What can we remove from the diet? I know that, you know, over the last generations, that the kids have grown incredibly taller. Does this have to do with the hormones that we're putting in the food? Do they need to continue to drink milk for strong bones like we've been told all these years? I mean, what are some of the things that they really do need to do and that we can do that can they're still going to have strong bones. They're still going to have, you know, plenty of protein in their body, but yet not taking in either the fat content or the sugar content that might be contributing to these other problems.
I'm so glad you asked this question. You know, most kids, teenage boys and girls are deficient in vitamin D, and it's because they're not getting enough milk. So
oh, wow.
I would strongly urge parents to get rid of the power drinks, the rehydration drinks, and make sure your teen is getting 3 servings of milk a day because it's loaded with vitamin D. And unless you live in San Diego or Arizona and your kids are actually outside playing, they're not absorbing enough ultraviolet light to make vitamin D. So 3 glasses of milk a day if possible, because they need at least 1,200 milligrams of calcium. Also, most of our kids are eating a little bit too much protein and not enough fruits or vegetables. One of the tricks that I can pass on is when your kids are growing like this, they're starving. As you're making a meal, put out a selection of carrots, celery, cherry tomatoes, maybe some cut up cucumber, and don't put the hummus or the dip out just yet. Let them start on that and sort of forget to put the hummus out or forget to put the dip out. Let them get used to eating raw vegetables. Vegetables, you know, are a little bit more difficult than fruit. Serve them a salad first, not at the end of the meal. You know, do what they do at Olive Garden, you know, or try to get a vegetable soup in them. Try to get as many fruits and vegetables into your kids as possible and really limit the high-fat protein. The next thing is fruit juice. Forget about fruit juice. Nobody needs to be drinking fruit juice. If you're going to have it, mix it with some water because it's just all it is fructose or empty sugar calories. Look, I'm not a big fan of juice bars either. That's 500 to sometimes 700 calories. Basically, it's a melted popsicle. That's not good for their skin, not good for their weight, and it just really does lead to diabetes.
Okay, now, let me ask, this is a more personal one on the juice thing. What about the juicers? You know,
if you're at home,
and you're
if you're at
yourself.
Home and you're doing a juicer, that's a good question. You're breaking down the sugar to a more simple sugar, but limit it to a quarter to a half a cup a day, you know, if you really want to do a smoothie, then add the yogurt. Make sure that you're putting in, fresh fruits like blueberries and bananas, peaches, or even some carrots or even some vegetables. Maybe mix in some zucchini or something in there so that they're getting more than just fruit sugar.
Right. And carrots.
You know, if you have an orange tree, sure, give them a quarter of a cup of orange juice a day. But really, you don't want to give them too much more than that.
Okay, and one of the things that we do is, and we juice a lot of apples and carrots. I mix the apples and carrots, juice it together, and use that for the smoothies and such.
Now that's great. I like that.
Now, now you also mentioned though with the milk and the vitamin D. What about those that are lactose intolerant? Is these things like Silk and such? Is that a good substitute?
Silk is a good substitute because it does have calcium in it. I don't know that it is, I don't think that it has added vitamin D. So think about getting a multiple vitamin that has vitamin D. Let me talk about vitamins for a minute. You don't need to use something really expensive for vitamins. Vitamins are vitamins. Your body doesn't care if it came from a tree in Mexico or someplace in Thailand or a lab in Van Nuys. It doesn't care. Molecule is a molecule is a molecule. Don't spend a lot of money because and look for 100% of the RDA. Don't go for 1,000 because your body will just eliminate that down your toilet bowl. And so it's okay. Just, you know, just wasting money. But a good substitute is, and I'm going to go back on this, you can do the calcium-fortified orange or apple juices or have your child take, most kids who are lactose intolerant will tolerate some yogurt.
Okay, so yogurt is a good thing then.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yogurt's a great thing as long as, again, read the labels. Don't want to have something that's just packed with sugar and has a little bit of fruit. You can, get plain yogurt and mix it with other things. The other thing that I like is cottage cheese or ricotta cheese or string cheese. String cheese is a great source of calcium. You can throw it in your kid's backpack and they can eat it as a snack. One thing I do recommend to parents is tell your kids to eat more often. Instead of three large meals a day, try to get the six small meals, and the small meals can be string cheese or peanut butter on celery or peanut butter on an apple, as long as they don't have a peanut allergy.
All right. And now we're talking about all the things that we would love to have them do, but two thoughts come to mind. One is that I think, first of all, we need to model it. And in this particular microwave society, I think that their time is such an incredible issue that we're rushing through everything. So, the big thing is if we're not modeling it, it's kind of going to be hard to get them to do it. But I think also, I mean, this I think is also bringing on more of the eating disorders. I mean, does it just seem like it because we have so much more knowledge of what's going on, or does it seem like we're having an eating disorder epidemic?
We are having an eating disorder epidemic, and I do see it with very health conscious parents who really got their diet in order. Maybe they lost some weight. Maybe they dealt with their own body image issues, and they are so afraid that their child is going to be overweight that they are just unrealistic with their child's diet, and they hover, or they, you know, they're the helicopter parents who are hovering over their child saying, don't eat that, don't eat this, oh my gosh, you know, don't have as much mayonnaise on that sandwich. So you're right, you do have to walk a very fine line, but you do have to model healthy eating with occasional splurging, and but offering lots of healthy choices and having those available, limiting the unhealthy choices, and then not saying too much, you know, just putting them out there, letting your child choose. I think that's a strategy that works for most parents, but not to say anything like, gee, you know, if you stopped eating so much bread, or we're watching our carbs today, you know, it really sends a clear message to your child that you're not happy with the way they look.
Good point. Good point. Yeah. And I don't want to make it sound like I'm blaming all of the world's ills on commercialism, but I think this is another thing that falls right into that category, because it seems like everything on the television, on radio, in magazines, that they're either trying to make you super skinny or they're trying to supersize you. I mean, it
right.
doesn't seem like there's any in between.
Right. And so we advocate healthy, 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 healthy choices, you know, protective choices with food, you know. Excuse me, trying to get lots of tomatoes because it protects your eyes and your skin, and, you know, trying to find all those green leafy vegetables that'll help your blood work better, and the antioxidants in things like blueberries, but chocolate, you know. I like to talk about flavonoids. Listen, if your kid likes Starbucks, let them have Starbucks, because there's flavonoids in coffee that are antioxidants and protective, you know. So try to balance it. But hey, an iced coffee where they put their own sugar in is better than the Frappuccino that's got, you know, 7,000 calories and whipped cream and caramel on the top.
Now, and when you're saying an iced coffee, I assume we're talking about decaf?
Well, you know, kids, you know, a certain age like caffeine, you know. And let's be honest, right? A lot of them are drinking Red Bull.
Right.
So, you know, if we say to our child, no, you have to have decaf, they may not listen to us. You could say, hey, you know, it's best if you go for the decaf, you know, and try to steer them in that direction. But again, help them make a healthy choice. You know, hey, maybe go easy on the Red Bulls, honey. Maybe, you know, less than five a day. But like, I have a friend who's a NASA scientist. She drinks three every morning. And thank God, you know, she's making sure that our, you know, our rocket ships work safely.
She's certainly not going to be asleep on the job.
No, she's not.
So
she said, I think I'm switching to decaf afternoon. You know, okay, whatever.
Okay. Okay, so we've talked a lot about eating healthy, but now let's talk a little bit about alcohol use. I mean, are teens drinking more now, or does it just seem that way?
What do you think, Alan?
Well, I mean, we're getting so much more knowledge of it. You know, in other words, it's being put out there so much. But, I mean, I can look back and see and go, you know, we experimented with that as teenagers, and we went out and stood outside a grocery store, and to have the guy that looks the oldest to ask somebody else if they'd go in, you know, and buy it for you. You know, but sometimes I think that my view sometimes gets a little bit jaded, because from a business standpoint, we see a lot of the ones that are already in trouble. So when I talk with them, they are talking about using a lot of alcohol and using a lot of drugs and such. But at the same time, I know that when I deal with more of my friends or my son's friends and things, you know, I feel like there's a little better balance, and I can kind of look at some of them and say, well, I think these guys may already be experimenting, and others I can feel pretty comfortable that they're not. So I don't know. It's really hard to determine, you know, when I'm kind of sitting in this one part of society, so that's why I kind of, but why I'm asking you that maybe you're getting a broader view of what's going on.
I was just on the East Coast, and I live on the West Coast, and you know, I can't speak for every area of the country, but I do think one of the issues that's come up is that a lot of parents of teens started drinking when they were 18, and the new laws are, you know, age 21. So there's sort of a wink, wink, nod, nod. Okay, well, you can have a little, we're expecting you maybe to have a little alcohol, you know, do it in moderation. So I think that there's sort of a tacit approval. Maybe mm-hmm. it's not overt that parents are saying, well, we know they're going to drink. We're just trying to discourage it, but we're certainly seeing a lot of alcohol use, especially now with the economy the way it is. A lot of the middle class kids have easier access to alcohol and marijuana than they do to other kinds of drugs. So there's certainly, that's my experience, they're certainly imbibing a lot more.
Now, and you mentioned marijuana. I mean, have you, or do you have an opinion on, in regards to the medical marijuana, on where that's going to take this next generation? I mean, there's a split decision in regards to some people I've talked to that have said they think that it's going to be terrible, it's going to be so much more accessible, and we're going to have so many more people using the drug. And then I've had other people I've talked to that said it sort of takes away the taboo from it, and that there will be less people using it. So what's your thought?
It's such a great question. I actually haven't given it very much thought, because I've seen both sides of the issue, probably as you have. I've seen that it certainly helps my patients on chemo feel better. I've seen that it, you know, does mellow people out. But I've also seen that it's, even now, there's such easy access. You can basically obtain a permit to grow your own sort of in these fly-by-night shady doctor's offices, and people are not using it for medical reasons. Well, maybe they are. They're self-medicating their underlying depression or anxiety. So, you know, I have to study it a little bit more. I'm not really sure. You know, I think I'll let better, cooler minds prevail.
Okay. Well, good. And I appreciate that. And actually, that it now gives me an idea. So if anybody has an expert in that area that's out there listening, give us a call or email us with their information, and maybe we will make that a show in the future. So now let's talk now a little bit more about drugs. Okay, we've gone a little bit into alcohol, but from the standpoint of drugs, do you feel that we are seeing an increase in our young people?
I'm certainly seeing a lot more marijuana use than I ever have. I think that's a trend now. In the area that I work, I don't see a lot of meth, although there is quite a bit in some of the outlying areas. I think some of the interventions for keeping kids from starting meth, or showing them the consequences, like meth mouth, those interventions have been very, very helpful. And I, you know, I've been practicing long enough to remember the crack epidemic. Yeah. And what I'm seeing with teens, at least, is so much more marijuana, a little bit of cocaine, lots and lots of ecstasy, and unfortunately, a huge spike in the date rape, or GHB.
Okay, well, and actually, I'm glad you brought that up. Let's talk a little bit about the date rape drug, because we've heard the same thing. And I mean, are you treating some of the girls that have been drugged in your practice?
I am. It's a very, very difficult. It's a trauma, no matter what. But the date rape drug, I've seen young men be drugged, and just to go back, you know, this is odorless, it's clear, there's no taste, there's recipes on the internet, people can mix it up, put it in a little vial, and spike a drink, or even food. So I saw a young man recently The only thing that he ate was dip, and a bunch of kids had this dip with, you know, crackers, and they all got very, very sick, and it was determined it was GHB. So it's, you know, unfortunately, I just treated a young woman recently who was drugged. The person took her home and then assaulted her repeatedly. It doesn't matter how smart you are, what college you go to, it can happen to anyone. And so what we do here is we try to, with every adolescent who comes in for any reason, we talk about the strategies to protect yourself. And the first strategy is buddy system.
Right.
Choosing the right buddy, somebody who's not going to ditch you, the first cute guy who walks by, having somebody's phone number on speed dial, so if you feel woozy at all, you can just press a button. But the buddy system seems to work the best.
And I think that's great advice. And I know that when that drug first came out, that was one of the things that we were telling not only adolescents, but friends that we knew, was A, the buddy system, but also... you know, don't walk away from your drink. And if you're going to, take a coaster or something and put it over it, you know, set something over it so that you don't have somebody, because people are going to notice, you know, if somebody is taking something off of your drink, you know, or for that matter, if you walk away from it long enough, don't go back to it. Just get another one. It's not worth
and
it.
Thanks, Alan. I'm sorry to interrupt. Also, if you're sitting down or you're at a party and some stranger comes up and brings you a drink and you haven't seen how it was poured or where it came from, you need to accidentally spill it. You need to be clumsy.
Great idea. I like the accidentally spill it because, rather than immediately make them feel like you believe that they're old creepy guy, you know, then you're doing it in a way in which it, you know, if it was for all the right reasons, you know, you haven't caused a problem, you know, by just pushing it away or you know, whatever. But yeah, I like that. Yeah, if you're clumsy and you accidentally spill it, now if it's a nice guy, he's probably going to buy you another one, and now the waitress is going to bring it.
Right, or you can walk over with them to get it.
Yeah, I like that.
Mm-hmm.
I love it when we learn something new. Now, I mean, is there anything else that you think that women can do to protect themselves from this type of thing? Is there anything that we're missing?
I think the other thing is be very aware of every decision you make in a circumstance. So I had a patient who liked to go to a bar after school to just unwind. She would go alone, and she would talk to strange men or men that she had never met. She'd have a couple of drinks, and a couple times she found herself being driven home by strange men, and she had a couple of very scary experiences. What we did was, we talked about all the decisions that she made. There were multiple different places or forks in the road, so to speak, where she could have made a different decision. And one could be, you know, if you feel like you want to unwind after work, unwind. Have one drink and then have sparkling water. You know, make sure you never go home with someone that you've never met before. You know, take the cab. There's lots of different things that you can do so that you can go out, have a good time, and be safe, but not get hurt.
Well, and I like that. And I want to share one that maybe a lot of people don't think of, and maybe the investigator in me is why I think of it. But we call it the Jedi mind trick. And essentially it is that if you feel you have to go out and you're by yourself, whatever, go over and talk to someone, another female in this case, go over and talk to them as if they're your best friend, so that anybody else that's there believes that you know them, and wave to them from, or nod to them from standpoint, or the same thing with one of the bartenders or something, so that they feel that you are not really alone. You know people in there. You just happen to want to be seated alone at this moment.
That is a great idea. I love the Jedi mind trick. I want to try that with my patients, or at least advise them to try it.
Yeah, yeah. So you've planted the seed to everybody in there that is a little different than what is reality. So good. Glad it could help.
Cool.
All right. Now, and I know one of the subjects that we get, probably the one of the biggest subjects that we get from parents when we're working with their teens has to do with sex. The parents aren't comfortable with talking about it, or they feel that they've approached it and the child wasn't listening. What are some tips that you have in the ways in which parents can talk to their kids about sex and not have the child feel like they're being talked at as opposed to being spoken to?
This is a great question. And I really learned a lot about this from my brother, who has two in college and one a senior in high school. And here's the advice: early and often. So talk to your kids about sex early and often, and there's plenty of different springboards for that. Anything you see on television or a movie or even dropping them off at school, you have lots of opportunity to comment on behavior that you're seeing. And so you might just put something out there like, wow, what do you think about that decision that you saw on television? Or, gee, I noticed that a lot of kids at your high school or your middle school or even in elementary school are hugging or holding hands. You know, when do you think kids are going to be ready for that? Use it as a springboard or something you read in the newspaper. Just to ask them what they think. So I think the first thing is ask, don't tell.
Yeah, definitely.
Second is I have a great script, Alan, and okay. This works just about for anything. And I've used it myself. I've had, you know, told it to parent groups when I give talks. The script is basically you say something like, gosh, I read or I saw somewhere, and you're going to fill in the blank. So I'll fill in the blank for you. Gosh, I read somewhere that kids in middle school are having oral sex in the bathrooms. You know, there's nothing wrong with oral sex. In fact, it's part of a normal, healthy relationship among consenting grown-ups or adults. Your mom and I just don't feel that kids your age are quite ready for that. So basically what you're saying is this is normal and healthy, if you feel it is, but we don't think kids your age are ready for that. So you can fill in the blank. You can do it for holding hands, going on a date, kissing. You could do it for looking at pornography. I mean, you know, a friend of mine called. She found that her 15-year-old son was looking at hardcore porn, you know. So she did the script, only it wasn't this is normal and natural. She changed some of the words. So you can change right. The words as you need to. It's normal and natural for you to want to look at women's bodies. However, right. This is something that we think is degrading and dangerous. In fact, we know that men who spend a lot of time looking at pornography have difficulty having normal relationships with real live women with a pulse. Mm-hmm. Most women don't do the kinds of things you see in pornography.
Right.
Therefore, your father and I are banning you, you know, that kind of thing. You get the idea.
Right. Now, do you also add to that a question on the end? So in other words, after you've said what the parents' view is of it, are you adding in there, what do you think?
Yes. Thank you, Alan.
Yeah.
The other thing I do is I always ask, how old do you think someone should be before they kiss, hold hands, go on a date, have sex, blah, blah, blah? Your kid has thought about it.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is, do these kinds of conversations when you're shoulder to shoulder, either in the car, taking a walk, grocery shopping, baking together, cooking together, washing the dishes. Do not do these conversations face-to-face. They're too intense for you and your partner to talk about, let alone you and your child.
That's a great point. I didn't think of it until you said it. And as soon as you said it, I started envisioning in the car or whatever, that as a parent, you have to keep your eyes forward, which mm-hmm. I think probably makes them feel a little better that your eyes aren't burning a hole in them waiting for an answer. So I like
also,
that.
Also, yeah. I'm sorry to interrupt. also, they're going to say things that are going to shock you. You do not want to, have your jaw drop open and go, "Are you kidding me?" You need time to recover when your child says something. The other thing is, Alan, is you have to spend a lot of time with your kids for them to open up. And so I'm going to be honest, I force my son to do things with me, and he doesn't want to. He's a normal kid. He's not going, "Yes, Mom, let's go to that museum," or, "Gee, I think I'll go for a hike with my mommy." He doesn't want to, but I force him, and I say, "Get in the car. We're going." If for the first 20 minutes or so, he does whine, "I don't want to be here," rah, rah, rah. But after that, the kid starts opening up, and I've heard this from parents across the nation. You got to spend time with them playing basketball, driving them here or there, taking a hike, going on a bike ride, walking the dog, and then just be quiet, because they do need to talk to you. They want to talk to you. And you have to listen to a lot of stuff you could care less about who wore what, who did this, who did that. And then they'll start opening up, and then you can ask your open-ended questions like, "When do you think kids should do X, Y, or Z?" Or, what would it be like for you if somebody offered you a joint in school, or something like that?
Sure, and especially if they've just commented on that, it's a perfect segue. Mm-hmm. I couldn't agree more. And I think to add to that would be, when you said that, you're going to, make them go do something, but I think also, and I'm guessing that you're doing this as well, is, if you're paying attention, you've got a pretty good idea of what they want to do and don't want to do, and there's nothing wrong with getting more involved in something that they already like.
Exactly. So I'm not going to take my 14-year-old son to a quilting convention, right? But there are things that they do like to do, and you can foster those opportunities. So you make a lot of good points, Alan. You must be a professional.
Well, I do my best. And I think I learn more from them than I think they ever learn from me. I just glanced over at the clock. We are almost out of time. And one of the subjects that I wanted to make sure that we touched on, and mainly because I know very little about, and that is the HPV vaccine. Now, I've heard conflicting stories. So first, can you explain to our audience what HPV is? And then, do you think girls really should be getting this vaccine?
I'm glad you asked. So HPV is human papillomavirus, and this is a virus that up to 80% of all women have been exposed to by the time they're 50 years old. So it's normal to be exposed, and it has really nothing to do with number of partners or behavior or choices that we make. 80% of all women under 50 have been exposed to this virus, so it's just a normal part of modern life. This virus, though, can cause cervical cancer, and it can also cause abnormalities in the cervix that requires surgery and can even prevent women from carrying a full-term pregnancy. So there are some serious consequences to this virus. We do have available in the United States and worldwide two vaccines. There's Gardasil that's been out on the market for about 2 years, and there's Cervarix that will be available in January. Both of these prevent girls and women from developing cervical cancer. So I would strongly suggest parents to consider getting their daughters vaccinated so they can develop immunity to prevent cervical cancer.
All right. Well, and I appreciate you sharing that. And as I said, we are almost out of time. I want to touch on the fact that if anybody has questions, I have been to her blog. It's Nurse Barb. It's NURSE. Capital BARB.com, nursebarb.com. If you go to that, there's a frequently asked questions. There's a lot of subjects on there. I could have spent hours on there, just learning more about what you're doing and the things that you're doing for women. I want to leave everybody with one thing. Go to that site, okay? There is something, and this will give you a smile, and it's called the Hormone Guide. And it says on there, it says, women will understand this and men should memorize it. Okay? I'm just going to give you that teaser. Go on the website, check out the Hormone Guide. At the very most, you'll get educated, and at the very least, you'll get a smile. Barb, thank you so much for coming on the show. I hope we get a chance to do this again, because I've certainly enjoyed it.
Alan, this was a pleasure. I hope you'll have me back, and sorry for all the interruptions.
Oh, please, don't worry about it at all.
I got excited
happy
talking with you.
Ooh, well, pass the word.
Okay, all right. I will.
Thanks. Bye now.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye.
Listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza. Only on LA Talk Radio.